Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by me, Robbie Earle, and by my good longtime friend from work, Kyle Schoenewell. Kyle, it's a little sad today because this is the first time in a bit that we haven't recorded looking at each other in the same room, and I'm feeling this kind of hole in my heart, but I'm so glad to be here.
That's very true. We've kind of come full circle on that, right? Because for so many years, we never got to look each other in the eye. And now we've done it so much recently that, yeah, there's a gaping
hole. We're spoiled.
Yeah. I'm actually recording this episode from my house for the first time ever. How about that?
Wow.
Wow.
That is crazy. I'm happy for you.
Thank you.
I always record from my house. But you've always been a, you know, big guy recording from the studio.
The Earl Sanctum. Not just your house.
That's true. That's true. The Earl Sanctum. Complete with a new Captain America, the first Avenger poster, which you finally got to see last time you were here. Things are always changing, always shifting. People start to think that they have a sense of what's going on here in the Sanctum.
Right.
Nope, you don't. Always, always moving around.
I'm not saying you're OCD, okay? So don't hear me say that. But you're very, very good at tidying things up and making things neat and clean, which is one of my favorite things about you. And the Sanctum is very much that. The posters are perfectly spaced. I didn't know you could get another one on the wall and have it still look so clean, and you did. You went from 3 to 4 in a clean way. I highly recommend. You know what? We need some more pictures of the Earl Sanctum, I think. That's got to be a social media thing.
Well, thank you. I am very proud of the shrine to Captain America there.
You're running out of room for expansion, though. I have to say that. At some point, you're going to need a larger room with a lot more stuff.
That's fair. That's fair. Which, you know, like, I guess we'll just have to continue to expand if only to house more and more Marvel art.
So true.
My comics closet is already, I'm already having to figure out how I can fit more shelves in there.
The full podcast budget goes right into renovating the shelves.
True. Just the important stuff.
Just the important stuff. So today's kind of fun. We haven't done this a whole lot. As we mentioned last week, there is just so much new content out there right now. I think this is going to be a really, really fun summer if you're just a fan of movie and TV.
That's so true. Yeah.
It's been a really good era, not just for the Marvel fans. And so because of that, I have consumed probably 30 hours of media in the last week or so. Long story there.
Love it.
And so here's what I want today to be. We are going to talk briefly, like 5 to 10 minutes, on multiple projects that Robbie and I are into today. It's kind of like one of those things where if we had a mailing list, we could say at the bottom, here are a few other things we are into. These are those things. Now, they're all going to be totally spoiler-free, but I know there are some people out there that want to hear absolutely nothing about these projects, and so, for your sake, I put the timestamps in the show notes here. so you can fast forward to the project you want to hear us talk spoiler-free about, and you can kind of jump around and hopefully that fulfills your needs. So, Robbie, I would like to start today, if that's okay, with Top Gun Maverick.
Oh, please, which I have not seen yet, which is killing me. But can I explain to you why I haven't seen it yet?
Please.
Quickly, before you give us your review,
please.
I realized during this past season of life that Candace has never seen Top Gun.
Oh, to be fair, it's before her time at this point. It's before our time.
It's true, but it's Top Gun. I weirdly grew up like loving Top Gun. Like my high school band used to, as a bit, the finale of all of our shows was playing the Top Gun theme.
That's so
and then
good.
We would have somebody walk across the stage with an American flag and I would salute.
That's so good.
At the lead.
That's so good. That's the highlight of our entire episode. I didn't know that.
I actually have a video that I can find.
I need to send you a video of my high school band doing a cover song. And as they're closing the curtains, I break into Eruption by Van Halen by myself just because I was like so needing to. I think
incredible.
We maybe played Sadie Hawkins Dance by Relient K. And then
Thank
I played Eruption.
You.
Unbelievable.
We've got a whole, there are a lot of videos that need to be shared is what I'm realizing. But
that's a whole different episode.
I love Top Gun. But I also, like you, weirdly, you're one of the only people I've ever met that loves Tom Cruise as much as I do. I should differentiate between loving Tom Cruise as a person and loving Tom Cruise as an actor, which I don't mean to say I hate Tom Cruise as a person. I don't. I'm just recognizing that he's kind of a weird guy while also recognizing that he makes incredible movies.
Okay, so...
And he does. He makes incredible movies, Kyle.
And that was my hot take on Slack. I personally think Tom Cruise is the greatest actor of our generation. And I started that discussion on Slack, and I said, who else would be in that top 10? And that was a whole different discussion for a different day. Obviously, you can toss out people like Tom Hanks, Scarlett Johansson. Like, I'm looking at people that have the box office...
Christian Bale.
Yeah, again, that's a whole different episode. But the box office success, the critic success, and then they've done it for a long time and made a wide variety of movies. And that's my thing with Tom Cruise, is everyone associates him with the action stuff, which is so true. And like, as you'll hear on this podcast in the upcoming year, the Mission Impossible series is unbelievably consistent, unbelievable movies. He has made some sleeper sci-fi things like Minority Report, Edge of Tomorrow, that are just incredible, like trippy movies.
Dude, good.
But then you forget about some of his more drama stuff.
Vanilla Sky,
Jerry Maguire, Few Good Men. Like, this is a guy that's been doing this for 30 years at an extremely high level, despite being a weirdo off the screen. So I would love to hear other people that have as large of a catalog as him, and as large and excellent of a catalog.
It's such a good point. And this is an episode for a different day, so I won't go too far down this path. But it's like, I think Tom Cruise, he's still seen as sort of the 80s, 90s movie star.
Sure.
But he still is that, weirdly. Like, it's like if you, like, I think one of the things that's been fun about seeing Top Gun Maverick do so well is how it is the return of the movie star-driven blockbuster. Like, we've gotten so used to the kind of content engine-driven blockbuster, which is like, oh, it's a new Marvel thing. It's a new Star Wars thing.
Sure.
It's a new Harry Potter thing. You know, but it's like, no, this is a Tom Cruise-driven film. Like, you are not going to see the new Top Gun film if you don't like Tom Cruise. And that's kind of fascinating to see that he still has that same level of pull, because I will tell you, like, we've never talked about this movie. You are obviously a huge sports fan. I am like a very minor sports fan, but Jerry Maguire is one of my favorite movies of all time. And it's a movie that's like all about sports, but it's because it's Tom Cruise and he pulls me in.
It's kind of like a romantic drama too, you know?
And I am a romantic. I mean, what am I going to say?
Yeah. You love some chick flicks. Hey,
it's
Rachel
true.
McAdams, I'm not judging. So here's what I want to say about Top Gun Maverick. First of all, follow us on social media at the FFW podcast and specifically TikTok, because I'm starting this new thing where I do 30-second movie reviews right after I walk out of a screener. So when I get a chance to see this film early, like I did with Top Gun, that's becoming my avenue for a quick spoiler-free review, which has been really fun. But a couple things. Since I've posted that TikTok, this became Tom Cruise's biggest opening weekend ever, which is crazy. So 146 or 148, I think. That's off the top of my head. Million. Obviously, there's a lot of factors that go into it. Perfect timing with Memorial Day, I think. Perfect timing with kicking off the summer. It being a must-see in theaters type movie. But I'm not some like diehard Top Gun fan. I've seen it like once or twice when I was younger. And, sure, you know, it's kind of cheesy and there's some nostalgia that plays into it. But I wanted to quick give
there's
you my review
of
this film.
There's not a lot of substance to it.
No, no. And that's what I want to say to people. You don't go to Jurassic Park expecting to see something other than dinosaurs eating people, right? Like, that's why you go to Jurassic Park. If you're going to Jurassic Park for some crazy plot, you're going to the wrong movie. And you don't go to Top Gun to watch some crazy Chris Nolan twist, right? You're going to see the plane stunts. The action is out of this world, Robbie. It's just like, it's so, the stunts are so ridiculous that Tom Cruise pulled this stuff off, that he actually learned how to fly planes, and it feels so visceral. Like, the last third of the movie is just, you have to see it in a theater, because if you don't get revved up by like the sound of jet engines or watching fighter jets do flips and stuff, then this movie is probably not for you. And I don't say that sarcastically. Like, I can see how some people, it's not their thing, just like I say with a lot of things. But
yeah,
if you like the practical effects in a movie that just looks unbelievably stunning because of that, because it's real jets flying around, you literally can't find a better remake. It like takes all of the stuff from the original, de-cheesifies it a little bit, adds the new technology, adds some good side actors like Miles Teller, and it's fantastic.
Miles Teller is incredible.
It's fantastic. So if you're into an action film like that, like I said, not for everybody, if you just want to feel good about yourself, about your family, and about your country, then you probably will like Top Gun Maverick. I'll just say my only knocks on it are it starts a little bit slowly, and obviously there are still some cheesy parts. Like, you're going to get Tom Cruise shirtless on the beach. You know, it's like, you're going to get some of that, no doubt.
I mean, but please also.
Yeah, but I think 8.5 out of 10 or so. Some people are giving it like, I think it's 97% Rotten Tomatoes. I'd say like 85, but it's very, very good. Go see it if you like that kind of thing.
Did you see American Made?
I have not.
So that's a fun Tom Cruise one. It's a 2017 film, but it's not worth me kind of going into the plot of, but it's sort of like, if you like Tom Cruise movies, you'll like this one. But the reason I bring it up is I was on a flight once from LA, and I met one of the guys that produced that movie.
Wow.
And we had this whole conversation, and I wound up fact-checking this later because it was such a crazy conversation. But he was talking about Tom Cruise filming that movie, and it's another movie where he's a pilot. The whole premise is he's sort of like a drug smuggler back in the 70s. It's based on a true story. He was talking about these stunts that Cruise would do where it was like they were – like there was one day where he was so insistent on going out and trying something. And I think like he was trying to get on this one particular like test stunt flight, and like last minute wound up not being able to do it. And the pilots that went out and did it wound up being killed. And it was this like really dramatic thing. And it was like, the guy was like, it was like one decision away from like Tom Cruise dying. Like, had he been on this thing, which is to say he's so committed to, like, because I think it was like the conditions were really bad and like he still was wanting to be a part of it, because it's like he is so invested in like that part of the process.
You know how we talked about Christian Bale changing his body type last week?
Right.
That's
yeah.
Tom Cruise version. He does these things, and I think he gets a kick out of being the guy that does these things. But as we get into more Mission Impossible stuff, like I said, we're going to talk about this like crazy. The hanging on the side of the plane, he's actually doing that. There's a crazy jump across a roof of a building that you can famously go look up the YouTube video that he misses and breaks his leg. Like, he doesn't make the jump and smashes his leg into the side of the building. Jeez. And they had to pause the filming because he's legitimately doing these things. Like, when you see him jump across the roof, he's actually doing it, including sometimes not making it. So,
man,
just absolutely crazy with that kind of stuff. So, like I said, if you like that kind of thing, you'll appreciate this movie. Next thing I binged, let's talk Stranger Things.
Yes.
So I would love to hear, since I just talked with Top Gun Maverick, let me hear your thoughts first, and then I'll respond. Again, we'll try to keep it briefer than that one. Sorry, Tom Cruise rant.
So here's my thing on Stranger Things. I, like everybody else, loved the first season. I feel like I enjoyed season 2 and season 3 more than maybe other folks did, while also recognizing that it was not on the level of season 1. So for me, I was very pleasantly surprised by season 4. Like, I felt like it was not necessarily a return to form for season 1, and that, like, it's a little long. Like, the episodes are really long. It feels like each episode is kind of movie length almost. And so
it's a lot of content. They're like 90 minute episodes.
I can see why people would say it's a little bloated in that sense, but it feels like a return to like the D&D vibes. Like, it feels like there's more Upside Down Hawkins, like it's more intimate horror rather than kind of big, massive monster. And I liked that, to where it felt to me like a return to what I found really engaging about the first season. In that, like, Candace and I binged through the whole thing over a weekend, and I was legitimately into the, like, I was wanting to keep watching. And then I felt like the ending of the final episode, which I'm not going to talk about here in case you haven't seen it, but left me really excited for the next installment, which, interestingly,
which
is
I
actually...
I didn't know about.
I didn't either until we finished, but it's not season 5, which I think is coming, but it's part 2 of season 4, which is coming in like a month, which is kind of a fun, unique way of doing a show release like that. But I guess my summary before, because you and I haven't really talked about this, I am not saying that Stranger Things season 4 is revolutionary television, but I will say I had a ton of fun, like maybe the most fun that I've had in a while watching a season of television going through this over the long weekend.
What would you give it out of 100? Just off the top of your head?
I think I'd give it an 83.
Okay. So a couple things I can fill in there. I had to do some research, but I got to the end of episode 7 and I was like, I don't think that was the ending. Like, I don't think that was the finale, but you do get a lot of answers. So I was like, okay, maybe. And then I had to Google, like, why can't I find episode 8? I was so confused. Finally found it on Google that, yeah, it's coming out in July. I think like July 7 or something, the final 2 episodes of this season. So yeah, interesting that they're separating them by 2 holidays with Memorial Day and 4th of July. But the last 2 episodes are like an hour 40, I want to say, and like 2 hours and 10 minutes or something. They're almost 2 full movies. So it's kind of like 3 or 4 episodes worth of content. And yes, they are doing a 5th season of Stranger Things, and that will be the last. It's a 5-season thing.
That was the vibe that I got.
So my quick take on this, I've had a lot of fun. You need to know, if you've never seen this, that where season 1 kind of dabbled with horror, this is pretty much straight horror at this point. They have ramped it up so much that this is, yeah, it's kind of not the, like, horror mixed with the kids figuring it out. It's now just horror. I love Stranger Things as a series. I think you know that about me. I got talked into watching it the first time, and it totally was my thing, right? Like, this is, this is the 10 Cloverfield Lane, Get Out, part of me, right. You know, that just, right. I always want to know what's going to happen. Can't guess. I do think that there was two things with the first season. One, it was so original and new when it came out that no matter what they follow it up with, it's going to be impossible to top, I think. Cause it's one of those shows where it's like, you can't just run it back. In my opinion, like you had the special magic the very first time just because it was new. Secondly, you tell me what you think about this. I've always a little bit struggled with as the kids have aged up.
Oh,
they've
totally.
Just gone into a little bit less fun of a phase, right? Like the fun part about the first one was they're so young that there's so much charm in it. It's got the Super 8 thing, right? Like the charm of the show is like, they're not in relationships yet. And does that make sense? Like they're all just, they want to play Dungeons and Dragons and ride their bicycles. And that is really fun for me. As they have gone into middle school and high school and like started dating and stuff, I just care a little bit less. And that's not a fault of the show because obviously the kids are aging, but I don't know. It's just a less fun period to be in my opinion.
No, I think that's fair.
But the fourth season, I agree with what you're saying. It does play some of the beats from the first season again, and that's been fun. Mm-hmm. The chemistry and the writing and production value are still so high. Like Steve is so fun. Steve and Dustin, the kids being around each other is fun. Like it's well acted. All the side characters are well acted. You're invested in the characters. All of that's amazing. There's some genuine jump scares. So there's some crazy visuals. So I highly recommend it if you like Stranger Things. I will say for me, Robbie, I do wonder a little bit though, if this is hot takey. Okay. This is putting me in the minority now. I'm a little bit like, haven't we done this before? Like there's nothing about it to me that's like crazy unique anymore. It's pretty much retreading a lot of the same things from earlier. So it's fun for me, but I don't feel like we're inventing the wheel here. It's kind of just, okay, I think we've done this. I know that's hot takey, minority.
No, I think that's fair. I think there are things about it I don't want to get into for spoilery reasons, but to me, there were things that were revealed in the final episode that's currently available. That made it feel a little bit more unique.
They brought it back up the back half, I think, for sure.
Yeah.
So for me, I would say Stranger Things has been a stair step down each time. So like the first season for me is 100%. The second season is 90. The third season is probably 85. And this is probably 80 or 75.
That's really interesting. Cause I would see it totally as kind of like a valley and then a sort of bump back up. Like, I feel like this one was my favorite since season one for sure.
Oh, really? Okay. I really liked season two still. There was a part of season three where I felt the same way as this, where I'm like, halfway through, I'm like, this is just not that great anymore. And then I felt like the back half of season three redeemed it.
Mm.
And that's a little bit what happened in season four, but yeah, I really liked two. So anyways, check it out.
I mean, Maya Hawke, who came in season three and is a big part of season four, is huge in terms of keeping me interested in this series. I feel like she's been, and she's it's fun. In keeping with the Friends from Work fandom here, because we're just coming off of obsessing over Ethan Hawke in Moon Knight, and now I'm obsessing over Maya Hawke in Stranger Things.
Wait, so is that his daughter?
It is his daughter.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, man. And she is so good.
That's blowing my mind right now. I didn't ever put that together. I guess I can see that now in her face a little bit.
Right.
Yeah, she's so good. Okay, but here's the thing with Stranger Things. It was so good. It was so fun. And yet the entire time I was watching it, as soon as I'd finished an episode, you know where my brain went? I need to get back to Severance. I need to get back to Severance.
Right.
And so now let's talk about Severance for a quick second. I know I'm late to this game, okay? So this one's not as timely, but holy crap, dude. You told me
it's
I'd
so
like
good.
It. Oh my gosh. So okay. So everything I just said about how I feel like parts of Stranger Things is not pushing the boundary anymore as far as like creativity. Holy cow. Right. What a unique creative story Severance is. I can't think of anything like this. The closest parallel to me is Get Out in the weirdness without it being horror, but it's this amazing genre. Okay, Severance is the one I'm going to be a disciple for here. If you haven't seen it, but you're into trying to figure out what's going on, holy cow, watch Severance. It's this amazing genre where it's never actually like horror or jump scary, but it's just so anxiety filled. Like you feel eerie. So stressed the entire time. Like every single scene is weird enough that you're like, is something going to happen? And you almost feel like you like work up a sweat while watching it because you're just so on edge. And I love it so much, dude. Not to mention some of the visual choices of his workplace, the performance from Adam Scott, the writing, the directing from Ben Stiller. How did I not get on board with this show earlier? I will be fully on board for season two. I'll be the first person in line for season two.
Well, so couple things. One, in your defense, whenever I was telling you about Severance, we were in the middle of like a crazy amount of MCU content and just things to work through. So there was the intentional decision on your part to wait until you had a breather, which I think was right because...
That's true. I did intentionally not hit play despite wanting to for like weeks.
But a couple things. One, yeah, I think Ben Stiller is actually... I'm not going to go on like a Tom Cruise level rant here, but I do think Ben Stiller is sort of underrated as a creator in general. Like there are several things he's made that I'm a really big fan of, to where I'm not saying he's like some savant, but I do think that he's made some really good stuff. Two, yeah, like whenever Candace and I found this, it felt like nobody else was watching it. And it was like, wait, holy cow, this is an incredible show. And I know every, like, you know, there are shows like that that just never get a wide audience. And I feel like this is getting more of one, has been getting more of one as the weeks have gone by. And I really hope that it does because, which I guess leads to my third point. Candace said, it's the first time since Lost that I felt like this particular kind of engaged with a show where I'm like, I want to know what this world is that we're living in. Like I want answers, but not in this just kind of like cliffhangery way that can be kind of a cheap storytelling mechanic. But yeah, it's like, and that's the one thing that I told her I'm so impressed with about this show. Like, I actually think that the hardest thing to do with that sort of a story or just like this genre is to find the right pacing. Because if you go too slowly, people aren't invested. And if you go too quickly, then you give away so much in the first season that there's no reason to really come back for the second season. Like, I think that I always felt like Handmaid's Tale was a little bit too quick for a show that had multiple seasons and that there was so much that was done really well initially because you got the sense that they didn't necessarily know if they had a second season. So then whenever they came back to one, it felt like they were a little bit like off the cuff or having to figure out how to reinvent certain things. And this has been like, whether it was because Apple gave them the green light ahead of time or whatever, the pacing is so deliberate and so phenomenal where it's like you get to the end of the first season having found out like just enough to be like maddeningly invested while still feeling like there are like countless episodes left for them to draw on because there's still so many things that you want to know about. You know what I mean by that?
Well, I have to say this. Because this is a show that Annika is watching with me, and because of my schedule watching all of Stranger Things as well, without Annika, we've actually had to pace ourselves on this show. Two things with that. One, it's actually been kind of fun to just watch one a night, turn it off, and talk about it. Like, again, throwback a little bit to Lost days where we watched one, now let's theorize for 30 minutes before bed, and then we'll figure it out tomorrow. And so that's been kind of fun. But two, I actually haven't seen the finale yet. I am on the pre-finale episode. We're watching it Wednesday. So by the time you're hearing this, I will have seen it, but I haven't seen it yet. I'm dying to know what happens, where it stops. But then I was wondering, Robbie, and don't tell me this, but I am at this current phase wondering, is this a show that needs a season two? Like, could this be a thing where it's standalone, like Inception? Like, the reason I praise Inception so much is I never got Inception 2. And I love that you can just come in, make this incredibly creative story, and leave it, right? So going back to the complaints I just said about Stranger Things, like all these multiple seasons.
Right.
Business versus art. So I'm hoping they land the plane on this season in such a way that I feel like I do want a season two. And it's like the right decision. That's all I'm going to say.
I think you'll be happy with it and feel that way. Because I think the biggest, like what I was just saying, I think the biggest problem is when you have a season one or a first film that feels very, not necessarily complete, because I think you're right. Like, Inception doesn't necessarily feel complete because part of the,
it's
the hook
complete.
Of it. I mean, I think I just struggle with that verbiage because I do think that like it as its own stands up. But I like that it leaves you lingering, you know, you're still thinking about it. So you're trailing off. It's not like you end being like it's not like for instance, Return of the King, like you end, or like the seventh Harry Potter, eighth Harry Potter movie, I guess, you end and you're like, all right, closing the book on that. That story has been told, moving on. And Inception's not that, but that's also like the genius of it. You're like, you're still thinking about it all these years later. And I feel like,
My gosh, masterpiece.
Right. But I think that's the thing that separates like a good season one of a show or like a good first film of a franchise is, was it set up such that this was going to be the only thing? And then you had like the business involvement later where it was like, oh, no, we can milk several other things out of this. Because then you can tell that that's kind of the situation. Whereas I think like what I love about Severance is it really does not feel that way to me. Like it feels like they were telling the first chapter of a multi-chapter story. And that kind of makes all the difference. But I am curious to see if you agree.
I can't wait. I literally can't wait. It's killing me. I have decided that one plot point that I like in films, if this is a genre or whatever you want to call it, I like movies that have injustice and they make you so mad. And then I like watching the characters like rise up against that, like that genre. So, you know, I'm talking about Severance, right? Without spoiling anything.
Right.
Like I love the, like, let's go do it kind of thing. I'm smiling right now cause I'm just so excited to see the finale. And I mean the next thing I'm about to say, unbelievably truthfully, ready for this? As unbelievable as watching Top Gun early, Stranger Things, and catching up on Severance was, I still also am mentally so invested in Ms. Marvel. And that's what I want to talk about next. I'm not being facetious. Let's get into Ms. Marvel. Our coverage of Ms. Marvel is brought to you by our friends at Epic Hero Shop. I am currently wearing my Wakanda Claw hard seltzer shirt while I'm recording this podcast, which feels so appropriate as summer is approaching. I feel like Memorial Day is kind of the kickoff of real summer, especially for us in the southern states. And our friends at Epic Hero Shop have an awesome new summer series line that you need to check out.
I've been loving my Asgard IPA shirt from Fat Thor Brewing, in part because it's an Asgard IPA shirt from Fat Thor Brewing, but also it's just a dope design. And I've loved, even since we just posted stuff, a lot of our listeners have gotten their own. But if you have not seen the design I'm talking about yet, go to the Epic Hero Shop and take a look at this fantastic shirt, because it's what you always say, Kyle. It's like, it doesn't have Thor flying with his hammer on
right.
it, right? It's like the perfect, you have to look at it for a second and understand what it is you're looking at to even know that it has anything to do with Marvel. And that's what makes it kind of fun.
Absolutely. They have made some really fun stuff and they've been an absolute pleasure to work with. So go to epicheroshop.com right now. And if you use our promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK, all one word, you can save 15% off your first purchase of anything not on their latest obsession line. EpicHeroShop.com, promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK. So the way this worked out with Ms. Marvel, I got a chance to watch it before you because there was a mix-up on the screener side of things. Doesn't matter. But I saw it a few days before you. Is that right?
Yep. At least, yeah, at least a day or two.
And so I crafted our first tweet to be ready for the review embargo to be lifted. And I gushed about this. You saw it a couple of days later, and pretty much the only exchange we had was, are you loving this or not? And we both were like, oh my gosh, I'm obsessed. Like, so I just want to start here, Robbie. Again, this is all spoiler free, but about six right. months ago, we did a Bold Predictions episode. And on that episode, I said something to the degree of, and I don't remember exactly, I am unbelievably excited to see the Ms. Marvel show in particular. I pointed that one out. Right. I singled it out. I singled it out with Douglas Woke. Remember that after he brought that up?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And that was mainly because I had finished that Avengers video game, which is not a great video game, but the lead character is pretty great. And it's Ms. Marvel.
Right.
And I just really love this fresh take. What if we have a character that's now young enough to be raised in a universe where there are superheroes, right? So it's not just the superheroes now. It's what are the practical effects on kids?
Right.
Do the superheroes become celebrities? And I thought that was a really fresh idea. So even with that being my expectation, the first two episodes surpassed both Annika and my expectations.
Absolutely. I think here's what's crazy. You wrote a glowing review of this, and you and I try not to talk about this stuff too much because we're already of the same mind in a lot of ways. And so I try to not unduly influence anything beyond that. And so I saw your review and I was like, oh, this is really positive. Like Kyle definitely liked it. So that's good. Like that means it can't be bad. But then I watched it and I was like, it's not that you undersold it in that, like, it's not that there's something else you should have said that you didn't say. But whenever I actually saw it, I was like, holy cow, this is incredibly well done. Like I feel like, and I don't like being super hot takey, and that's why you and I talk about this. Like I don't like to come out and be like, this is the best thing ever, because then everything dies down a little bit and everything finds its slot within the MCU. And so I don't like to say every new movie is the best film the MCU's ever made. But I will say, you know, you and I have talked some on the podcast about as Marvel's taking bigger swings genre-wise, does that sort of inherently lead to some misses, right? Like, because for the longest time, I think Marvel was like, this is a lane that we stay in. And as long as we stay in this and do this very well, we're not going to make a bad movie. And I think that was true for the longest time. And I'm not saying they've made bad movies in Phase 4 or bad shows, but I do think that Marvel now realizes that they have enough of an audience to where they can take some risks. And, you know, like by definition, taking a risk means that there's a chance it won't go well. And I say all that as intro, I guess, to like when I was looking at Ms. Marvel, I thought, well, this is Marvel trying to kind of take their swing at a like young adult coming of age genre thing, not in the way that like Spider-Man Homecoming is with this like bankable 60-year-old massive character, but with, in the grand scheme of things, a relatively unknown character. Now, I know within Marvel, Ms. Marvel is well known, but talking about like the, you know, compared to Spider-Man, the world writ large. And so I didn't really know what to expect. Like, I know you were saying sure. You had really high expectations. I don't know what my expectations were, but I will say that this is the best thing that I've seen Marvel put out in a while after the first two episodes. Like, in terms of just, like, I'm not saying it's, like, there are Like, look, we've talked about this before. we've talked about this before. I'm a Spider-Man freak. I love Thor. Like, there are things that I personally just love as a fan, as like the person that grew up reading Marvel. But in terms of just something that I watch having zero concerns with, like, there are no acting issues to me. There are no writing issues to me. The directing, like the visuals, like not just in terms of like CGI, but in terms of the way that certain things are actually visualized. It is just spectacular. Like it's one of those shows that I want to show people to be like, look how good Marvel stuff is.
So I have so many things I want to say quickly here. I agree with almost everything you're saying. When I say it exceeded my expectations, part of that is because I always thought they would do a good job with it. I just didn't think it would be a genre of show that would keep me thinking about it. And I would come back to my hotel room after watching Stranger Things, which is really good. And I would tell Annika, I can't stop thinking about Ms. Marvel. And that just blows my mind because I didn't think that was possible, truly, with a character like this. The second thing I want to say is it's becoming really apparent to me that one of the most important traits of a successful Marvel project is how much the lead character is fully bought in to that character and that story. I know every actor is going to tell you they're all in on the role, right? Like they're all going to tell you that. But if you read between the lines, I think with certain things, you can find the ones who are truly all out. And Iman Vellani is, the second you see her, you'll be like, this is the most perfect person to have playing this character. And when you see her off the screen, be such a big fan of Iron Man and Tony Stark, Robert Downey Jr., Kevin Feige, and the rest of the MCU, and how much she knows about it, you're like, this is the most perfect person to play a character who's obsessed with the Avengers.
Right.
She's so charismatic. Also, Robbie, the family dynamic, wasn't it unbelievable? Like, I was so bought in on her story with that. I can't talk about specifics, but like the side actors are amazing. The way they're portraying her background and her family, like what that means culturally for a family, was unbelievable. I thought the school dynamic and like her friends are perfect fits. So the last thing I'll say is this, just like I said with Jurassic Park, like I said with Top Gun, like if you go into Ms. Marvel thinking it's going to be dark Daredevil, Moon Knight, you're wrong. Okay. It's not going to be. And that's the only way I could see you not liking this. Like, it still is going to be genre specific to some people. I get that.
Right.
So I could see somebody walking out of the first two episodes. And again, we haven't seen how the remaining four are, so we don't know. But I could see some people walking out and going, man, that's just not totally my genre. And that's truly okay. I cannot, however, see any person, Robbie, walking out of the first two episodes going, that was bad. Like, that sucks.
Yeah.
If you were asked after the first two episodes, is it fresh or is it rotten? Like Rotten Tomatoes, this should have 100%. This should have 100% Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody should walk out of that and go, wow, that was terrible. They don't know what they're doing. So to tie this all up, kind of this rant here, I think about the other shows where like the way Elizabeth Olsen is invested in her character, the way we heard Oscar Isaac talk about his character and the way we heard Tom Hiddleston talk about Loki and now the way she's talking about Ms. Marvel, that ownership just leads to an exponentially better show. And I'm just going to end it there. I'm genuinely excited to see where this goes. They are so unbelievable at trying a new genre, pushing the boundaries, and then not just doing that genre well, but almost reinventing that genre within the MCU.
I totally agree. Two more things. One, I just think you're right. The quality of this is such that yes, I can see somebody coming and sitting down to this and wanting, like, they want their, like, badass, like, grizzled man that has a past that has to, like, take down his demons. And yeah, if that's your vibe, this is not that, for sure. But also, if you come away from this telling me that this is poor television, that this is poorly done, I am just going to recognize that you and I have very different ideas of what is and isn't quality. Because I think that I was watching the show, and I don't want to oversell this at all. Like, I'm not saying that it's going to, like, change the way you look at your entire life or something, but I'm just saying I was watching the show, and I was just thinking, like, I watched Obi-Wan pretty quickly after this, and I was, like you were saying, watching Stranger Things and some other things, and it was like, I think that our bar has been lowered some in what we come to expect from these main franchises. Like, and maybe I'm being a little bit hard on Star Wars. I think there's a lot of really fun stuff about Obi-Wan.
That was the other thing we didn't talk about. I didn't watch it yet. Annika and I are waiting. We're going to watch that as soon as we finish Severance. So we'll have to do another follow-up a little bit with a spoiler-free preview of that.
True.
But you're basically giving it to me now, so that's great.
Well, so this is my, like, maybe hot take. I just think that it's like we love some of this content so much that we're willing to forgive certain failings. And I'm not, this is not me.
Which we all do. We all do, by the way.
For sure. Like, and I think that happens with Marvel. I think it happens with Star Wars. It happens with Harry Potter. It happens with, like, any of these, like, Lord of the Rings. Anything, like, I spent so many years trying to figure out ways to defend the Hobbit movies because I love Tolkien stuff so much, right? And I love Peter Jackson, and I want it to be good. And I had this like revelation watching Ms. Marvel where I was like, oh, this is just good. Like, this isn't good because I love Marvel stuff. Like, this isn't good because I have to tell somebody, like, okay, well, like, here are all the things that you need to have watched to really love this. Like, and it's not good in this way where I'm like, well, just stick around because there's this payoff, like, three episodes in. And none of that, I'm not trying to cheapen any of that. Like, that's all very fair. I'm just saying,
right,
I
just
had this moment
so
of, like, yeah, like, this is just excellent. Like, I really feel like if you come to this with an open mind, I truly cannot imagine them having done any better of a job with the Ms. Marvel character. And that leads me to my second and final point, which is just, this is literally the most I have ever seen Marvel pull from a comic into an adaptation like this. And there are several moments throughout the MCU that I've said they've really done that well, like Captain America, the First Avenger, you know, they really pull from those early Captain America comics. Spider-Man Homecoming, they did a really good job of pulling from some of those early Spider-Man comics. But here, like, it is actual, like, line for line, panel for panel stuff from the G. Willow Wilson original Ms. Marvel run. And it's done so well.
Well, and there's some creative things there that I can't say because I don't want to ruin anything, that it's just perfect.
Yeah. Well, and I say that, like, again, you know, like we said online, there's been all this controversy around the way that her powers work and the way they manifest.
Right. Well, and that was going to be my follow-up point, which is if you were concerned about the way her powers look, I think these two episodes answered, you don't need to be. If you were concerned that Iman was going to be a little bit too young compared to, like, the Avengers version, the video game, you don't need to be. It's perfect. The chemistry and the charisma is perfect. And if you were concerned that Marvel might be continuing its trend of, like, some visuals being off, you don't need to be. They're really well done.
Well, no, it's like, to your point, it looks cool, but it also looks awkward when it needs to look awkward, if that makes sense. Like, it's like her powers, they look good visually, but they don't look like she's like a badass either. Like, because I think that was part of the problem people had is like, oh, but her powers are supposed to look kind of weird
because it's supposed to be awkward a little bit.
Right. And they still give you that. Like, it's just so they're able to capture all of these things. And like the actual manifestation of her powers, you know, I think there's been a lot made of that, of the inhuman side of that. But I've
stop
probably said
making
before,
so much of it, please. That's
yeah.
My
well, and just no, stop. Exactly. And honestly, like I don't know if I'm making any like massive inhuman fans out there mad by saying this, but that happened because, again, talking about the business versus plot side, in 2014, 2015, Marvel was pretty sure that they were not going to have the X-Men in the MCU. So they were really gearing up to make the Inhumans their mutants, like moving forward. And that wound up not working well for them. The Inhumans project went very poorly. And now they have the X-Men. And so, lo and
they
behold,
don't really need
Yeah, you check the Marvel comics now, not a lot about the Inhumans, a lot about the X-Men again. And my point is just like, I don't think that it was this thing where G. Willow Wilson was like, you know what's really core to Kamala Khan? She has to be an Inhuman. I think it was Marvel saying, hey, Inhumans are a big thing right now. That's your jumping off point. What's the character that you have that comes out of that? And that's where we got Kamala Khan. So I just think the version we get here feels in some ways a lot more like grounded and a lot more natural to me than the way that the character comes about in the comics anyway. And you can, you know, find us online and fight me on that, I guess. But I just think that the people that are so hung up on that, I don't think that you have any reason to be concerned. If you're a fan of this character and kind of what the character is about at her core, I think you're going to be... what I said online, and I stand by, this for me is the rare case where I think hardcore comics fans and hardcore MCU fans are actually going to be equally happy with this project.
Can you tell that we liked it? I mean, have we gotten that across? This is not a paid advertisement for Marvel. I say this a lot. I'm totally ready to be critical on things where they need to be criticized. Yeah, this just isn't it. This is so good.
I mean, look, we'll take down Pip when we have to take down Pip.
Sure. The last thing I'll say, Robbie, as I wrap it up, is you have to approach the show with a little bit of that Captain America, the First Avenger sincerity. And that's what they do so well here. For the most part, you just feel good. I don't know if that makes sense, but like you and I both appreciate movies and shows that sometimes are just fun and make you feel good. Like that was one of the things we liked about No Way Home was it's just fun to go to the movies and watch that movie. Like, are there little issues? Yeah, but it's just fun. And by the way, here there's basically not even issues, but it's just like you watch it and you just feel good about life. Not because it's such an uplifting story. I just mean like you get to a spot emotionally where it's just fun to be there. That's a poor way to describe it, but
no, you're right. Yeah. Though.
It feels, this is going to be so cheesy. Okay. You ready? Disney sometimes has an ability to make things feel really magical.
Right.
Like there was a new Pinocchio trailer, which is a movie from 1939. And Tom Hanks is going to be the lead character, by the way. Side note, that's their next live action remake. And Annika and I are huge fans of Beauty and the Beast, so we're really invested in these remakes. Anyways, my point is, you hear When You Wish Upon a Star, and there's no way to say it. It just feels magical. Written by some guy in 1939. As a musician, I'm going through the chords like, what is it about these chords that like make it feel so magical? And they just have a way to do that. And that's a little bit how I felt when I finished Ms. Marvel. Man, Marvel, Disney, they sometimes just have this secret sauce that just works and you just feel like you're in a magical place. So there you go.
Yeah. That's a good way to end it.
Yep. So guys, this is our last quote unquote off-season episode. We are now kicking off the next phase, the next era of this Marvel coverage, starting with Ms. Marvel episode 1 next week, Thursday. So now we are going into the Miss Marvel Thor mashup, which will culminate in a mega week in early July, I'm sure, talking about both these projects. And if you couldn't have gathered from this previous 30 minutes, we are as pumped for that mashup as we've been this entire time. We hope you enjoy it. Stay in touch with us. Follow this podcast. Subscribe to this podcast. Rate and review this podcast. And tell your friends about it. Stay in touch with us on social media at the FFW Podcast and our website, theffwpodcast.com. We're just getting started. We have so many fun ideas that we can't wait to get into in these next few months. Thank you for listening. We love you all. And we'll see you next week talking Miss Marvel on Friends from Work.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.